The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to the XX Gabfest for Thursday, December 28th, the Everyone's a Little Bit Sexist edition. I'm Hannah Rosen, a host of NPR's Invisibilia. In the New York studios today are June Thomas, editor of Outward, Slate's LGBTQ blog. Hi, June.
Hey, Hannah.
And Noreen Malone of New York Magazine. Hi, Noreen.
Hi, Hannah.
So today is our special call-in show. We put out a number. A lot of you called in and left fabulous, fabulous messages. Don't you guys think? They were just fabulous.
Yeah, they're all awesome. Of them.
Yeah, all of them, really.
We had a hard time picking.
Yes.
We really, really, really did. So we're going to talk to a few that we picked. We're going to play them on the air and answer them. And then in our Slate Plus segment today, we'll discuss yet more of these fabulous calls. If you're not yet a Slate Plus member, you should be. You can start your free two-week trial by visiting slate.com/xxplus. Hear the show ad-free and also sponsor all the great work that Slate does. Okay, ready to roll? Let's play our first one.
Hi, this is Janelle calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I have a question about work etiquette. I have a new coworker, and he does not put the toilet seat down after using the restroom. We have shared both gender restrooms. And I want to say something to him about it, but asking a male coworker to do something to accommodate my preferences as a female coworker seems to be unnecessarily gendered and therefore seems like it could be sexist. Thank you. Bye.
You guys, this is the greatest question ever asked.
I know. It's like a spin on an old dilemma. Yes. It really is.
I think I want to start because I did some reporting. This is the only reporting I've done all year. So I've got to come back with what I've learned. So I asked some men around the office, the Slate office, what their view of this was. And they told me that even in a men's room that only men use, which apparently is as disgusting as you might think some of the time, the ideal situation is for the toilet seat to be put down when people are finished doing their business. So he's not he wouldn't be doing it just for her taste and her preference. He would be doing it for the general preference of the entire world. Am I wrong about that?
Oh, my God. I can't believe I'm like in my head. I'm like, I'm thinking number one or number two. And then I got to actually verbalize
right.
that. But that's disgusting.
It's so gross.
Because it just depends what the guy is coming in to do. But, you know, whatever. We picked a bathroom question first. You are right. It is potentially not just for the women in the office. It's for everybody in the office. However, it would be perceived as like a prissy woman thing.
Yeah, I do think that it would be wise for her to not make it a personal request to the person with bad bathroom etiquette. I think it would be better to somehow get a general email sent out. It's one of those things that's better
yes.
produced as like, this is not just me asking this. This is just a general, hey, we're all in this bathroom together. Here's, you know, let's just all agree so you're not singling out a guy. Because it's not just about what you're going to do in the bathroom or on the toilet. It's just like, just generally, when people share a space, it's expected to put the toilet seat down, isn't it?
Right.
Or to think about other people who are sharing the space in whatever that means. So maybe this is the classic thing where when women are asking for things, if they ask just for themselves, everybody, you know, gets a little worked up about that. So what one should do to get around that reaction is to portray it as for the good of everybody. Like you're just taking one for the team here. So I think that, you know, let's go. I don't know. How would you say it without sounding like such a priss? Like, let's go over the bathroom etiquette, because you could name a few things. You know, it's like that. What's that sign in the airplane bathroom?
There's always lots of them.
For the good of the next passenger. It's some wording like that. Like for the pleasure of the next passenger, could you please wipe down the sink and blah, blah, blah. So it's a little bit like that language. You know, we all share this bathroom. But I wish she didn't have to send it.
No, I don't
think
she should.
It'd be better if she could get someone else to.
I think she should get HR to send it or some third person. They shouldn't even know that it comes from her.
How much would that HR person hate their job in that moment when they have to send out that email that's like on behalf of someone else's passive aggressive bathroom?
But do you think it's passive aggressive? Do you think she should say something in person?
No, she shouldn't say something. I mean,
That is what HR people get paid
for. I know. I was just imagining typing that email myself and just felt radical empathy for that person.
I hear you.
It it is not great that she is at a point where she has to send this. I'm angry at her coworker.
Right. But
have we answered?
I'm angry at his mother.
Right. Yeah. Right. Whoever didn't teach him
and his father.
Sorry.
But is the whole thing sexist? I feel like we're dancing around the question. We're talking about whether it's polite or not.
Right.
But is
right.
it sexist?
Is it now? What? Who? Where is the question of what is sexist? Is it sexist for her to feel bad about bringing it up, or is it a question, or is it sexist that she feels bad about it?
Is it sexist the way toilets are designed? Let's really get to first principles.
Right.
But what's the sexist part? Is the sexist part that, wait, my head hurts when I try and think about it.
That's
is the sexist part that it's like gendered because it has a built-in assumption that women like clean bathrooms, but that's like society's built-in assumption, right? Many people in general like their office bathrooms not to be clean.
And it's not just about clean. It's about leaving the toilet seat up. That seems to be the specific
It's like,
issue.
Is the default toilet setting the one that men prefer or the one that women prefer?
But that's the thing. That's why I asked those men, and they said it's not necessarily what they prefer. And it's not just about what they're going to do. It's just that, like, the resting toilet position is seat down for everyone.
Oh, my God. That's the that's the subject line of the email.
Exactly.
Resting toilet position. A memo.
Andy Borowitz is going mad right now. He's typing like a fiend.
All right. So I think we concluded that you should take care of this business, take care of your business, but not necessarily do it in the method that you suggested.
Right. Don't do something that you already think will be nagging him when it's just about doing something really basic, but instead make it have someone else who's in a position of authority around the office manager or the HR person or something like
or
that.
Or can I suggest a really passive aggressive thing?
Okay.
Talk about it, not naming him, within his earshot. So he just overhears it.
Oh, wow.
But like, oh, it's so rude. Someone kept the toilet seat down again. Yeah. If you want to really go the passive aggressive route, I'm not necessarily endorsing it. I just want to put it on the table as an option.
You're totally endorsing
it. I'm wishing to have a good male friend who would do it for you.
Yeah, that would be
like,
nice.
Dude, put the toilet seat down. Come on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We solved that one.
Hey, wait a minute. What do we think about putting a sign in the bathroom just like in the airplane?
Oh, yeah.
I mean.
Saying what?
Saying resting toilet seat position is down.
Do you laminate it? Like make it seem like it's an official HR sign?
Everything in a bathroom should be laminated.
True.
You know, just like that's just basic. That's just basic
that
common sense.
That should have been the title of our show. Everything in the bathroom should be laminated. Oh my God. That's so great. I think that's another good one. That's passive aggressive, but kind of easy to pull off. You just sort of print out a nice looking sign on slightly thick stock paper and put it behind the toilet. That's a pretty good passive aggressive move.
That's like when you go to a restaurant bathroom and it's like employees wash hands, you know, it's just, you know, laying
it's
out the
reassuring.
Ground rules. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There we go.
Yeah.
Solved.
Okay.
Solved.
All right. We came up with so many good passive aggressive maneuvers and then a few just aggressive maneuvers. So you got a lot of choices. All right. Next caller.
Can we please talk about the use of the word guys? Like, hey guys, how's it going? This drives me nuts. Because we would never call a group of male-identified or male-reading individuals, hey, gals, how you doing today? But guys is considered to be the norm. And for me, it's just another part of how the patriarchy digs its fucking claws in.
Hi, my name is Mason. I have a question for you. Is this sexist call-in show? Question is calling a group of women guys sexist? I noticed Nori Malone doing it several times during this week's podcast. Thanks very much. Bye. These are so fresh and delicious, Kitty. They're so fresh and delicious.
Can we please include that?
That's going to be another good title.
All right, fresh and delicious. Noreen, since you are the...
tool of the patriarchy.
The tool of the patriarchy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe you could take this one on why you're constantly calling us guys and if that's sexist.
I am unoffended by it, obviously. I think of guys as gender neutral. Is that wrong?
Yes.
Well, I think what the caller is saying is
it's not. I know.
It's not that gender neutral. Uh-huh. It's one of those leftover terms. It's just kind of leftover and floating around in our consciousness. But it does actually refer to men. And yet we all use it as the default. So maybe the queer, like we need to queer that one up and just force a term that's traditionally like, hey, bitches, you know, or something like that, that you would just casually refer to a group of people as.
I thought we were in a post-gender era where we could all be labeled what we want to be labeled. See, to me, the beauty of guys, it's like it's casual and inclusive and informal, right? So you're saying it's a little bit of a like we're all on the same team here kind of thing. And gals, I don't know, it's very like Leslie Knope trying to get everyone in the office to do something they don't want to do.
Yeah.
Whereas guys is like something about the word feels cozy to me or something. Again, I'm sure I'm a co-opted, you know.
Yeah, you're a co-opted sheep. That's all there is to say. I agree that guys has, at least in this country, become completely ingrained and it doesn't make us shiver anymore. But that doesn't mean it's okay. We should probably break ourselves of this habit and use a non-gendered term. But all the ones I thought of are kind of, they're not right. They're like peeps, y'all.
I've heard you use these.
Yeah, I've tried, but
it's successful in your dulcet tones. But coming from me, I don't think it would work.
Yo, peeps.
Just try it.
Okay, peeps.
I type y'all a lot. I think y'all is just a beautiful word. But I mean, I'm so from Cleveland, as you can hear from my voice, and I just cannot say y'all without sounding like a jerk, I think. But the principle of y'all is so wonderful.
Yeah, the English language needs a second person plural. We lack that.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that other languages have, even though they have their own, many of them have their own gendered issues. But yeah.
You never say you guys?
Oh, no, I do. Okay. I do. Okay. But it's completely ingrained. I say it to guys, you guys, all of that stuff. But we probably should let go of it.
It is weird how all these years of language evolution has produced no good substitute. There is not a female equivalent, for one thing. There isn't even one that you can substitute for a room full of women.
Ladies.
What do you say when you walk into a room full of women? Hey, ladies.
Hey,
that's
ladies.
So ironic.
Yeah.
Guys is not really ironic. It's just straight. Mm-hmm. Hey, ladies. Hey, women. I mean, what is the right term?
Yeah, I guess.
Hey, females.
Hey, future presidents.
That's good. Maybe I'll try that. Hey, future presidents.
I just think guys feel so straightforward to me. I think we should reclaim it.
Whoa.
I do. Why should we give up such a nice word to them? Huh? Why should they get all the nice things?
Is this a hill you're going to die on? Is this the one?
Yes, because I am not going to be able to train myself to stop saying guys, so I have to make it feel a little bit feminist.
Noreen, you're still so young. You could embrace y'all.
Y'all.
But aren't we in the moment of inventing new words? Isn't that the moment we're in now where we could just try one out? Like the Swedish do it. Just pick one and try it out.
Maybe we could say, hey, Swedes.
All right, listeners, we obviously need help on this last part. I think we've concluded that guys is okay, but we have a duty to come up with a better one. We just don't have one quite yet, but I think we should try, and then we should try and use it on the show and see how it rolls. Like, so suggest a few for us on Twitter or Facebook or wherever, an email, a few words that we could use and try calling each other. We'll try and do it throughout the course of a show and see if it feels at all natural by the end of the hour.
This also, though, brings up a question for me. So we've concluded guys is okay, mostly, I think, because we think it's not that severe of a crime. So those people who don't listen to Slate Plus every week won't know that you know, that's something we do wrestle with. So a lot of things in the world are sexist, but we basically conclude that it's mostly harmless sexism. And it sounds like you guys are like, yeah, Noreen, you've been co-opted, but it's okay in the big scheme of things.
Yeah, I would say it's low priority sexism.
Right.
Like,
okay.
This will not be our first battle. Mm. Like, this comes after several other battles have been won.
This is when we just want to make them feel bad.
Okay. Right. Okay. Solved that one. Boom. Next.
Hey, gals. My name is Brittany. I live in Manhattan. And my question is this. My 3-year-old does not like it when I do her hair. But she looks so much cuter when I put her in pigtails or a ponytail. And sometimes I force her to let me do it, and sometimes I don't. My question is, on the days when I make her sit there and she yells at me while I put her hair in pigtails, is that sexist? Thanks.
I want to hear from you on this, Hannah, since you're a mother of a daughter.
I'm thinking so hard about this. I do force my son, my little son, not to wear his nattiest clothes to school. Now, that's not quite the same. It does cause him some amount of pain because his favorite clothes have holes in them. And it's largely because he goes to a bilingual school and they're like, you know, this is probably, whatever, they dress better than, like, they look good, right? They don't have, like, natty, bingy clothes. Their hair is usually looking pretty good. So, like, the standards of dress at his elementary school are such that I force him to change if he's got holes in his pants.
Can I just ask you something? What's the significance of the bilingual school to the record?
Just that it's like Latino dress code. Like a lot of the kids are Latino kids from DC, and they don't, you know, they just look bad. I don't know what to say. They have gel in their hair like at age five, right? So like he just stands out if he's got holes in his pants. So that's a thing.
I see. That's a thing at that school.
Yeah, it's just like a cultural aesthetic is slightly higher, you know. Mm-hmm. But that's neither here nor there. I do torture him. So my philosophy of this is that I think you landed already at the right place. It is a little bit sexist if you're doing it because, you know, you somehow think a girl is not allowed to drop down to a certain level. So that's a little bit sexist. But I also would say you should do it some days and not other days. Mm. Honestly, like that's where I've landed. It's just, you know, if you feel like it, if it's what particular day when you're in the mood to be sadistic, just do it. But don't do it because you feel like shame if her hair is messy. You know?
And I also think like, cut yourself a little slack. It's not like you're entering her in toddlers and tiaras beauty pageants, you know? Right. You're just trying to, like, make her look cute. Like, that's, I mean, isn't that, hasn't biology evolved so that we find little children cute? Like, that is part of what's appealing about small children. That's why we, like, nurture them.
That's why we put up with all those missing hours sleep and so on.
Right.
Exactly. I've actually wrestled with the opposite problem, which is why can't I find the language to explain to my children why presentation and self-presentation is important? Mm. Like, why is that so hard for me to explain to them that you should, in fact, when you go out in public? It wasn't hard for my mom or for my mom's mom, but somehow for me, I can't find the language.
What did they say to you?
They just thought that way. Like, you should always look like, if you don't have any money, you should look like you have a lot of money. This was like the family philosophy. Like, you know, if it's your last shirt, just make sure you iron it. It was like that was always the talk you got before you left. My mother used to iron my hair and, you know, all this crazy stuff. And so I just can't find that part in me that forces the ponytail. So I have a hard time criticizing you for it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like an ambition thing. I mean, this is not the ponytail thing, but I remember my parents used to say, you dress for school like it's your job. And now that I have a job, I wear like jeans. And I don't
probably dress like you're going to school.
Right, exactly. But I think that's sort of a nice way of thinking about it. Like you dress to be taken seriously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Paula doesn't say why her daughter doesn't like it. If it's just that she prefers to be more relaxed, that she doesn't like pigtails, she doesn't really like having her hair touched, or she doesn't really go into why. But it sounded like the guilt was around pigtails specifically, that was a look that she liked and thought was cute, and she was feeling a bit bad for imposing that on her daughter. But there's a phrase that my mom used much too often, which is, I won't be ruled by a kid.
And it's like, a great phrase.
part of the role of a parent, at least in the early days, and obviously some parents take it too far, is to set standards. Like, that's something you get to do. If it's causing the child a lot of discomfort, if she really, really hates it, that's another issue. But, you know, just being the mom making decisions about what your child wears and how she wears her hair when she's too small to do it herself, that seems kind of reasonable unless there's some larger problem or some larger discomfort.
I've got just two small things to add here. Maybe go through the thought process of, I don't know if you have any sons, you didn't mention whether you do, would I do this with my son? Like, would I force my son to wear something or wear a pair of shoes that he that were uncomfortable or that he didn't want to do on any given day? So that's a way you can answer the question. So it's not like you're setting different presentation standards for boys and for girls. And second, hair detangler. I never used it, but my friends with lots of daughters use it. Sprayed on, takes the pain away.
Wow. Boom.
Boom.
Hi, my name is Karen, and I have a question about food. So I have a lot of friends from different countries, and sometimes they bring food, sometimes I bring food. But there have been a couple of times recently where we've been studying, I'm in grad school, where we've been studying, and I get hungry, and one or two of them are at my place, and so they go... They just kind of assume that I'm going to make food for them. And then a day or two will go by and I'll get an email or a text and say, hey, you should make dinner for me again. Is that sexist? I'm the only girl. Thank you. Bye.
Hell yes.
Yes.
Hell yes. This is for some reason the one that made me the maddest, even though I love to cook and I take great pleasure in like people coming over and cooking, the kind of casual like back-ass assumption that like, hey, you should cook for me, makes me crazy.
Yeah.
Can anyone explain why it makes me crazy?
Well, because it's an assumption and and it's just because of gender. It's a totally gendered assumption.
Well, and also there's an interesting thing going on here where she started by saying all of these friends are from other countries.
Right.
And so I also think it's like maybe there's kind of an American thing that's happening where we're like, that's, you know, that's not our culture anymore. You know, we've moved beyond that. All these other countries are still a little bit backwards. Because it is true that, like, men in America now love to cook. That's, like, a thing that's happened.
It's awful, too. It's really annoying because it's not just that she's expected to cook. It doesn't sound like they're bringing food for her to cook, which wouldn't be any better. But there's an expense. There's also the time that she's not studying because she's getting together food. I think she needs to say, look, if we're eating, which I don't know that we all have to do when we're studying, but if there's food going on, you need to either bring food with you already cooked, or if we live in a place where there's delivery, you need to pay for the delivery. But it's not just that I'm not going to make your dinner for you, but also this has to be shared out. It's not, it's just, even apart from all the expectations of cooking, it's just unfair for one person to be providing food for everyone. It's either everybody shares and everybody brings food in one way or another, or nobody does.
So can I throw one question into the mix?
Yes.
Do you think they were possibly hitting on her?
Oh.
That occurred
like,
to
cook
me.
For me, like, we're...
Yeah,
we're
like, let's... Like, right, like, let's...
Yeah.
That I think that could also be a dynamic here. I don't know the situation. Yeah. She didn't specify. I mean, there was a lot of context you would need to make that assumption, but that did occur to me.
I also think it would be different if they were like, hey, I'm bringing the wine. Your soup was so delicious. Like, you know, something like that was more kind of full of compliment and a communal spirit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or I'll bring the appetizers or I'll bring the beer or whatever it is that suggests the kind of communal pitching in, but a nod to her wonderful cooking, you know?
Like, sure. I'll go to the grocery store.
A little bit better.
Yeah.
But is it sexist? Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
Hi, my name is Adrian, and I live in Maryland. I'm a big fan of the podcast. I just wanted to know, are parking spots for expecting mothers sexist? Thank you so much. Bye.
That is a good one, man. That is a good one.
Is that a thing?
Yes, absolutely. There's a couple of them. I feel like the stores do it to be showy, to be honest. You know, like there's always a picture of a little stork, like as if that's how the baby's coming, in which case you wouldn't need the damn parking space. Like there's, you know, there's always a graphic like that, because otherwise you'd have to draw like a, you know, a woman sort of looking tired with a big belly, and that's probably seems wrong to them. So it is a little bit of like performative sort of chivalry. On the other hand, you know, if you're really pregnant and you got to get some groceries, it is annoying to have to walk all the way across the parking lot or down the street or whatever.
Yeah.
So
it seems difficult to enforce. You could be like, yeah, I'm 3 days pregnant, guys. You know,
right.
So here's a question. Do you, so sexism that works in our favor, How do we feel about that?
Examples, yeah. Like getting a seat on the subway or something? Or doors, like
chivalry,
things like that?
Chivalry, basically. Yeah.
I never really mind it because I think it is harmless, you know, in the great scheme of priorities, like no one really cares. But at the same time, I think it makes guys or butch women feel good. And so why not let them? You know, it's a no-cost boost, and it sort of encourages a positive behavior. And so I'm kind of for it.
I think I'm for it,
although
it
does reinforce certain kind of, like, in the experience of it, it's nice. Like, believe me, when I was pregnant, I was really, really happy to have the pregnant parking space. On the other hand, it does reinforce a kind of patriarchal order.
But being pregnant is really a strain on the body, right?
Right, isn't it?
And like, you have no choice. It's not like men can do it. So I feel like the expectant mother things, it's like society has no choice but to, you know, to have the woman carry the baby. So why
and
not?
And it's acknowledging a biological reality. Yeah. I don't know.
I mean, just think of DC, like say you're heavily pregnant in DC in July or August. My God, the least you can do is get a parking space. It's like, I'm surprised you don't get like food delivered every night and just like a million benefits, because it must be just physically really, really hard. And it would be great if lots of physical hardships were made easy, but we've chosen to focus on this one, and that's the one that we, you know, acknowledge. And so, hey, let's not cut it off.
Right, the temporary one.
Right, exactly.
And if you shift the context a little bit, let's say the question were, you know, I was, you know, 8 months pregnant and I was on the subway and somebody didn't give up their seat, you would think the guy was an asshole. So it's slightly along that logic. Like, we all accept as a society that pregnant women need a little something.
Yeah.
And so a parking space.
And the other thing, too, is it's not compulsory. I mean, if you don't feel you need it, you don't have to use that parking space. And just like on the subway, sometimes pregnant women will say, no, I'm fine. It's not worth sitting down or whatever. So it's not, there's still an element of agency. It doesn't remove women's agency by making this available to them.
Mm-hmm. It would be great, though, if we did decide it was sexist, and then there'd have to be like the depressed parking space that, like, every ailment, everything that someone could be feeling that would genuinely bring them down, they'd have to have a parking space for it.
I think that should,
just to be fair.
I think that should happen. I'm all for that.
Yeah. So we decided not sexist on this one, right?
Yeah.
Well, how are we defining sexist? Does sexist mean it harms women?
Oh, my God. You've cut to the very quick there.
Like, what?
Does it harm women?
Yeah, I know. That's a good way of thinking of it. Or is it just like a different treatment based on gender?
What do you mean by harms women? Do you mean like, does it reinforce, well, like I said, does it reinforce a patriarchal order, a sense of women as vulnerable, a sense of pregnancy as a special condition that makes you vulnerable and requires special care, a sense of delicacy around women?
Is it just like, we know it when we see it? Should we just go with that? That's, I mean, that's the premise of the whole show. We're just like weighing in willy-nilly.
But yeah, no, I like that, though. I do think that that's the ultimate question is like, does this harm women? And this one I don't think does.
I don't think it does either, because it's just you're tired and it's like just a physical thing. I don't think it has long-term consequences. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So no, we stick to no, not sexist.
It's fine. Take that parking space.
Yeah. Whereas the one we discussed earlier, the guys who cook, that does have long-term consequences, because then all those guys will just kind of casually do that to their wives. Mm-hmm. So she's setting up better marriages for all those men, even if they aren't making moves on her.
Since we're doing well on time, I'm just going to take a moment to just tell you that when I was at university, I wasn't allowed to live in hall because people on our course didn't stay there for the whole time in the first year. I'm going into too much detail. Anyway, we had to live on our own in like flats. And there was so we were 18 and some of us couldn't cook. And there was this guy who came to school and his girlfriend came with him. And he was also in a flat. And he never lifted a finger. And all he would say is, Mungries. that was his command that his girlfriend, Hazel, would make his dinner.
Oh my God.
Mungries. Is a mungre.
It's an amazing accent that you did.
Awesome. That was really good. Can you just do it one more time?
Mungries. Is
I'm going to make that my ringtone. It's so good. Oh boy. All right. Next.
Hi. My question, if I'm not too late, is is making fun of, say, the men of the Trump cabinet for being bald sexist? Is making fun of any man for being bald at all akin to making fun of women for being fat or for other body-related things? So that is my question. Is that sexist? Thank you. Bye.
I think it is. I think we shouldn't do it.
It totally is. I think it's sexist. It is sexist. However, I think when we make fun of Trump's cabinet for being bald, we're not making fun of them for being bald. We're making fun of them for being clones. The thing that we're pointing and laughing at isn't, oh my God, look at all those bald guys. It's, look at all those guys who look exactly alike.
Right. Like, the implication probably was, like, those older men.
Probably.
But in general...
But how's it sexist? How's it sexist? In some ways, it's good for women because it makes, you know, it points out that it stings both ways. So you should stop doing it for women.
But it makes the whole world more appearance-oriented. Yeah, yeah. It reinforces, you know, beauty norms for men, too. And if men... I just think that, like... It's not accepting of all forms of beauty, Hannah. Your husband.
No, but that whole
thing. You need to relitigate that.
Oh, God, my husband, the baldness. But I mean, you know that whole thing where like men wear makeup or men start doing their hair mm-hmm. or they start waxing or whatever. And then you think, well, now you see what it's like. Now you mm-hmm. see how much hard work this is. We're against that. You don't think that equalizes things, that men suffer the same things in terms of, you know, labor over your physical self, kind of being judged by your physical self, all the things that women have been suffering for such a long time. Now men get a dose of it.
I'd rather lift the boat than push them down into the, you know, the choppy waters with us.
Yeah.
Good, Jesse Jackson. That was good.
Get me out on the trail.
I definitely take your point, though, that it probably does do them good to recognize the effort and so on. But it's something that they can't help. It's something, yeah, it's about their appearance. It's really not cool. My dad had a hair transplant because he was bald when I was born. Like, he was a very early baldy. And it was awful. It was incredibly painful. It cost a lot of money that he really didn't have. But he was so freaked out about his appearance that he went through that. And that's really, really not cool.
I want to go on the record as saying that baldness in men actually does not bother me.
Right.
I think it is much worse when men try to cover it up. And if a man is just losing his hair, I don't think it really detracts so much from his appearance personally. So, which in and of itself is probably sexist that, you know, I don't care that much about men's appearance. And I think men care about women's appearance.
Right,
but, yeah.
But such is life.
Yeah.
That was like a little dating call there.
So Baldy's calling.
All you guys out there, Noreen's gonna get like 1,000 pictures of. All right. Well, okay. I'm just gonna run a theoretical by you. Okay? Okay, Thomas Pusder, who we talked about on the last show. He does in his bones just casually think that men objectify women and women don't objectify men. Like, he thinks that's the order of the world. Like, it's perfectly okay for him to size up women based on their appearance, but it never occurs to him whether he's attractive or not attractive. It's just not in the mix. So what about calling him bald? I don't even know if he's actually bald. I'm Googling a picture of him right now. But just to give him a taste of his own medicine, am I allowed to do that?
I think we should just call him ignorant. We should call him what he is, you know, and like change that conversation.
Yeah, he's got a lot of other issues. And you know what? Somebody like that, he's not going to make the slightest bit of diff.
Mm-hmm.
Bald.
He is bald?
Just saying.
So we can call him bald and ignorant.
Yeah.
Wait, can I tell you the funniest conversation I ever got in with a publicist? I called in writing her client bald, and she called me up to yell at me, and she said, he's balding. And I said, no, he's bald. And we were like shouting at each other, and it was like a straight up Seinfeld episode. And I asked my editor if I thought we should change it, and he would just like shook his head silently, no. So
what's his hairline situation?
He had a full head of hair.
All right. Okay, good.
Okay, so we resolved that one. It is, well, is it sexist? It's something-ist. It's not good for women. So we're going to say no.
Yeah, it's definitely Luke-ist.
Yeah, it's Luke-ist. Luke-ist, something. So in the way that Noreen has set up the scale, it's no good. It's sexist. Not good for women.
I like that I am the ultimate arbiter of sexism here. Cool.
Congratulations. Cool.
Hey, Double X. This is Adam from California. I have a question for you. So I'm a gay man, living in San Francisco, and I think I picked up that thing of I'll refer to something I do as bitchy. And I was talking with my sister the other day, and she was saying she feels like that sexist because it's a gendered term. And, I had to think about that. And I think it probably is, and it probably is something I should stop doing. But what do you think? Thank you so much. I love the podcast. Bye.
Hannah, what do you think?
I think it's sexist, but I really like when gay men say that. So it's like, I just like the way it sounds, and I just think it's funny. But I definitely, we had this conversation once about whether drag is sexist, you know, whether right. drag preys on certain kind of, you know, base and crude female stereotypes.
Right. Ms. Cracker came on the
yes,
show.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, that conversation really taught me a lot. There's a little bit of that here, for sure.
Yeah, so even though the word bitch obviously is a gendered insult, it does feel different when people use it for themselves, when they take it on themselves and apply it to themselves, than when men use it against women. That does feel very different to me. Mm-hmm. So I think it's very hard for me to condemn someone for saying it about themselves. But when a man or anybody really only uses bitchy for women, then that seems, yes, sexist and something that we should probably strive to avoid.
But that seems kind of arbitrary. Like, aren't they categorizing the worst and meanest parts of themselves as essentially female?
Potentially, yes.
Right. Do we think bitchy is at all post-gender or no? Is it,
I don't
it still
think
definitely
so.
Just means like women are bitches.
I mean,
bitches are women.
I've never heard anybody use it against straight men.
Oh, I have. You're being a little bitch. But that means...
Oh, really? That means you're acting like a girl.
Yeah, it's definitely gendered in that instance, but wow. You hear it against straight men, sure. Huh. Yeah, I think, like, this is another one of those where, like, yes, I guess it's sexist, but it's not the hill I'm trying to die on, you know? Like, it doesn't get under my skin in the way a lot of linguistic stuff does.
What's a linguistic thing that does?
The C word? I really hate that word. I don't know why. I just really hate it.
Nobody goes around calling each other that.
Yeah,
like just like at a, you know, just
it's a party
sitting around
a,
or no, whatever.
I have heard women describe other women as cunty frequently.
Oh, yeah, that is true. Absolutely true. You're right. That's true.
And that bugs me. It's like, why go there? And for some reason,
right.
I use bitchy. I do. But like, it feels like degrees of something to me. And I don't know, that could just be ancient, you know, what my parents yelled at me about versus not. But it just feels crueler.
Well, when you were like, Mom, you're so cunty. Your mom was like, that's rude, Noreen. But when you said, Mom, you're such a bitch, it's like,
yeah. No, I don't know. Just something about that word bugs me a lot.
Yeah.
Huh. See,
I wonder if bitch, the sting has been taken out of it. What do you mm-hmm. think, June? Like, it's no longer particularly female. Like, if a word gets used long enough by gay men and then by everybody, then it's not female particularly. It's like guys.
Right. I mean, I guess in theory, since that was my point of view on guys, I can't really be too dogmatic about it. But it does still feel stingy to me. And just in terms of where I hear it or where I see it being used, it does seem to be used as a put down for women or as an even worse put down for men. And I think the fact that if straight white men don't use it about themselves, then that's a good sign that the word really hasn't gone
Was Donald Trump, remember when he said, I moved on her like a bitch? Was he referring to himself or her as the bitch there?
This is one of the great dilemmas of our time. But yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Presidential historian. We'll weigh in on that in the future.
It's like, I moved on her like a dog would move on a bitch. Isn't that like an animal? That's like some kind of virile, sort of feral, I mean, reference. Isn't that what he didn't quite get it. It's like a botched metaphor, but I assume that's what he meant.
Yeah.
Like he had animal images in his head when he said that.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I think we're calling this one a little sexist then.
Yeah. But
because June's standard was until straight men. So if anyone can prove differently that Donald Trump meant he was the bitch, then we've broken a little barrier there.
So it's sexist, but you can say it in front of Hannah.
Yeah. And Adam, you can say it about yourself. You have my permission.
And if you're really attached to it, then get your straight male friends to start using it. And then it's a fair game. All right. Bitches, guys, bitches. That's our show. Peeps, y'all. That's our show. Let's do recommendations. Noreen, you want to go first?
Sure. I have been watching a British TV show, which is, I know, usually June's recommendation, but I've been watching Crashing. A couple months ago, maybe we talked about Fleabag, which was a show from a British actress and writer named Phoebe Waller-Bridge. And she has another show that's now streaming on Netflix that's more of an ensemble, but features a character who's like a less dark version of her character on Fleabag. So if you were into Fleabag, I would suggest Crashing. It's sort of like Friends, but British and a little wilder, a lot wilder maybe. And there are only 6 episodes, so you can kind of work your way through it pretty quickly.
That is next on my list.
Oh, really?
That's the next thing I'm about to watch. I'm awesome. So excited because I loved Fleabag, and a couple of people have told me that that's a really good show. All right, I have one for you, all of you who are in the middle of your holiday season. I'm a huge fan of Reply All, the podcast. They did such a beautiful episode a couple weeks back called Hello. I mention it because, you know, we're doing a slightly less spontaneous version of a call-in show, but they just stayed awake for 48 hours. Well, and they had to answer the phone. And so they just had people calling for 48 hours. And it just becomes this beautiful, weird meditation on human connection. It's such a wonderful, fabulous, fabulous show. So if you need to zone out, it's kind of a long show. But if you need to zone out on an airplane or anything like that, it just will put you in the proper weird holiday mood.
Cool.
All right, June.
So I would like to recommend a show that has just finished its, I believe, second season, Younger, which stars Sutton Foster and Hilary Duff and various other marvelous, marvelous actors and actresses. Various actors, I guess it's a gender-neutral term. And the second season, or the most recent season, was, I think, its best yet. The premise of the show is that Sutton Foster is 41, but she's passing for 27, so that she can be a young person at a publishing company. And she eventually kind of gets tagged to work on the millennial imprint. And the actual story, like fooling people, has thankfully fallen apart, because that's rather uncomfortable, or it's fallen away. But the whole question of living in Williamsburg and moving among young people if you're not one yourself, and just all the romances, I think it's really good. So Younger.
Sounds fun.
Yeah, it does. Okay, well, that's our show for today. Thanks to our producer, Vera Lynn Williams. The executive producer of Slate Podcast is Steve Lickteig. Andy Bowers, the chief content officer of the Panoply Network, and our wonderful intern, Daniel Schrader. And thanks to all of you, actually, this week for calling in and leaving truly fabulous questions for us. The XX Gabfest is part of the Panoply Network. Check out the entire roster of podcasts, itunes.com/panoply, our show page, slate.com/XX. Although, what will be on our show page this week? It's not like we've referenced high feminist tomes.
Well, there will be the audio.
Oh, yeah, the audio player and the recommendations.
Yeah.
Our Facebook page, facebook.com/XXGabFest. Our Twitter, XXGabFest. Email XXGabFest@slate.com. On all of these places, you should leave us a substitute for guys. We're in search of a substitute for the word guys that we can test out on a future show. You should also subscribe on iTunes or any place where you get your podcasts. Leave comments so other people can find out about the show. For June and Noreen, I'm Hannah Rosen. We will talk to you in a couple of weeks.